This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm Lacey, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we'll talk about a small town murder in North Dakota that had everyone worrying that they could be next.
Then we'll discuss the duct tape killer from South Dakota.
So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Peace Garden State
and the Mount Rushmore State.
Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves in immortality. We slowly drove, he knew no haste. And I had put away my labor and my leisure too for his civility. We passed the school where children strove at recess in the ring. We passed the fields of grazing grain. We passed the setting sun. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. The roof was scarcely visible, the cornice in the ground. Since then, 'tis centuries, and yet feel shorter than the day. I first surmised the horses' heads were toward eternity. Because I Could Not Stop for Death, written by Emily Dickinson. In 2006, Mindy Morgenstern was a 22-year-old student at VCSU in Valley City, North Dakota. Mindy was actually born in Bogota, Colombia, and both she and her sister were adopted by Larry and Eunice Morgenstern when they were little. But they were raised in New Salem, North Dakota, on a farm. New Salem is part of the Bismarck metro area, and on its own, it has a population of just 946, according to the 2010 census. So in my research, I also found out that around 90% of the state's land is used for agriculture. That's a big state, too. North Dakota's climate is perfect for producing livestock and small grains and is a top producer of navy beans, pinto beans, canola, flaxseed, wheat, and honey.
Look at all the beans!
I know, and I guess I always just think of it as snowy and cold, but it's great for farming.
And
Beans! Mindy grew up on the farm and loved helping her dad Larry with all of the work that went into it. She also loved driving and riding tractors, and she loved riding horses. Her dream was to coach basketball, and she was majoring in physical education and was in her final semester of college. She was into track and basketball in high school, but unfortunately got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and was no longer able to participate, but she still didn't let that keep her away from her love of sports. She still could stay physically active, and she even worked as a lifeguard at the university and for the city during the summer. The rest of the year, she worked part-time as a waitress at a nearby restaurant called Roby's. It's now called the Pizza Ranch.
The Pizza Ranch? Mm-hmm.
One night, Mindy's friends Tony and Danielle were out having fun and called Mindy in hopes that she would join them. She didn't answer the phone and she didn't call any of them back, which was a little unusual, but, you know, they were just like, hey, let's just go by her place and see what's up. They drove over and Mindy lived in an off-campus apartment. Tony Bauman went upstairs to Mindy's second floor apartment while Danielle stayed in the car. So as soon as she walked into the dark apartment, she saw a horrendous scene in front of her. Terrified, she ran downstairs to the car and begged Danielle to go back upstairs with her. They discovered Mindy's lifeless body in an almost decapitated state. She was strangled with her own white cloth belt, and there was an upside-down bottle of Pine Sol in her arm, and it appeared that someone had poured it over her entire upper body. A knife from the kitchen was also halfway cut through her neck, and it was used with such force that the handle was coming off. There was no sign of a forced entry, and nothing appeared to be stolen, and the apartment didn't look ransacked or anything. Nothing was strewn about, but after an investigation and autopsy, it was concluded that Mindy may have died around 12:20 p.m. on September 13th, and that was based on her cell records and computer use. Kind of a strange time of day to murder someone, just broad daylight.
Sure.
It happens, but it's just kind of, wow. So whoever killed Mindy may have tried to hide their DNA with the Pine Sol that was used, but it didn't completely work. So Mindy had DNA under her fingernails. It was like, it looked like she fought back and that they were thinking her killer probably had scratches on him based on that. So as investigators looked into the case, they were totally stumped. This was a super small town where everyone knew everybody. Mindy did not have any enemies, and there was no obvious suspect, so they really didn't even know where to start. And because of that, they interviewed over 100 people. So that's a ninth of the town, if you think about it. So in the meantime, the entire town was terrified, thinking maybe it was a murder. Look, you know, they were a serial murderer or something, or they could be next, because they really didn't know who could have done this. So Mindy did have an ex-boyfriend named Kyle that they brought in for questioning. They asked him about their relationship, you know, like, why'd you break up? They were together for almost 3 years, but he said it was rocky. They argued a lot, but he hadn't had any recent contact with her or anything, but they did take a sample of his DNA, and he allowed it. So his father actually remained in contact with Mindy after they split, and they talked quite frequently. They kind of had their own bond going. So the cops were kind of thinking that could be unusual, so they called his dad in and took a DNA sample from him as well. So after Mindy's murder, crowds were around the building. You know, everyone's gathered outside, rubbernecking what's going on, including friends, family, police were still there and so on. So the apartment, her apartment was taped off, but people were still all out there.
Lacey would have been out there for sure.
One of her friends named Lacey was there outside. It wasn't me. But she noticed something off. So the tenants of the building were all wondering what was going on, and a lot of them were gathered around too, because, I mean, it's their building. They're freaked out. But one guy showed up with a laundry basket. He showed up in the car and just walked through the crowd like nothing was going on around him.
See, that's me. I'm not worried about what you guys are doing. I'm just trying to get through here. Like,
but, I mean, think about it. It's your apartment building. Everyone's outside.
Totally
police
unbothered.
Are there. Well, so she just thought, hey, that's a little strange. So she mentioned that to the detective.
He was obvious, like, trying to.
He wasn't sticking around. He was just getting through there. So Lacey mentioned that to the detective, and they brought him in for questioning. His name was Mo Gibbs, and he lived across from Mindy with his wife and stepdaughter, and they were just moving in. So it's a small town, and so small that the cop that interviewed Mo actually knew him from his own co-ed softball team.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm talking small town, small town. So Mo was a correctional officer nearby and knew a lot of the cops in the precinct and everything. He did have a scratch on his arm and a mark on the back of his hand that looked like it could be from a fingernail, but was hard to know for sure.
He was a correctional officer, so it could have been.
Yeah, well, he said they were from moving and that the other one was from his stepdaughter's car seat. So they questioned him, and he claimed not to know Mindy, and they took a sample of his DNA as well. So now let's rewind a little bit. So 3 weeks before her murder, Mindy filed a police report. She had a really odd experience outside of the restaurant she worked, and it really freaked her out. She was so upset over the ordeal that she called her mom, Eunice, to tell her all about it. And I don't know what was said, but to Mindy, I don't know what the guy said, but she was super nervous. So it was just an experience. Some guy said some weird stuff to her when she was outside of the restaurant. I don't know for sure. Well, so she, you know, she was a waitress, and she, along with her coworkers, would sometimes have flirty men in there that kind of made them uncomfortable. They questioned an older man who lived right across from the restaurant who claimed he didn't know Mindy and he didn't see her in the restaurant. But just in case, they took a sample of his DNA. When Tony and Danielle first found Mindy's body, a neighbor nearby came to see what the screaming was about. So he comes up there and sees them, you know, upset. So he checked Mindy's pulse, and he was just making sure she wasn't still alive. But since he was there at the scene, they called him in for questioning as well and took a sample of his DNA. So because they were grasping at straws, they were really taking a lot of DNA and stuff in, which is great. Well, finally, they got the DNA results back in, and 4 were negative, but 1 was positive. And they ran it a second time just to make sure it wasn't an error, because they want to take a guess at who it was.
The guy carrying the clothes
back. Yes, how'd you know?
Oh my God, I'm so good.
So the positive sample belonged to Mo Maurice Gibbs.
Terrible name, by the way.
He actually changed his name to that. We'll get into that a little later. That's what he picked. So Mo Gibbs was 35 at the time, and his family considered him to be a loving and caring man.
They always do.
Yeah, they always do. He was a 6'2", 230-pound former boxer, and he was a Barnes County jailer. But the folks in town that knew him thought he was a nice guy.
Yeah, gentle giant.
That's what they thought of him, but he did have a rocky history. So the cops, of course, called him back in for further questioning. You know, they found out he was in the Navy for 9 years, but was dishonorably discharged. But when they asked him why, he just said, assault. And he didn't want to elaborate because he was saying, it's a long story. I don't really want to get into that. So obviously they can figure this out on their own. So they did. So he had previously spent 5.5 years in prison. On May 9th, 1992, in Seattle, outside of the Oz nightclub. You know where that is?
No.
I don't either. Shots were fired into the crowd around 3 a.m. One of the shots hit a woman named Vonette Young, who was standing outside of the club. She did survive, but she was injured. So Glenn Dale Morgan Jr. was the man accused of shooting into the crowd, but he ended up changing his name later to Mo Maurice Gibbs. His then-friends testified that Glenn, a.k.a. Mo, had started a fight when they were leaving the bar and that he was the one shooting into the crowd in front of the bar with a .25-caliber handgun. Well, because of the severity of the crime, he was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison, but served 5.5. So he ended up back in North Dakota because his mom lived there, and he played college basketball for Mayville State University, and he was attending, he attended one semester of college there. I'm not sure why he left, but he had a very long string of relationships. He was married and divorced several times. Child support records show that he had 2 children with 2 women within 10 days of each other in 2003.
Oh my gosh, the kids were born within 10 days
yes.
of each other?
Yes, yes, yes. It gets, it's very complicated. I'm going to go through it, but you don't have to remember all of this. So yeah, he had 2 children with 2 women within 10 days of each other. And court records show that 5 different women have sought child support from him.
Oh, geez.
And then he had 2 other children. So I believe in total he had 7.
Good grief.
With 7 different people. He married Chrissy Judd in 2006 and became pregnant with their child. But she filed for an annulment soon after, citing he had numerous affairs with other women, both before and during their marriage. Then, that same year in September, he became engaged to Amy Olson, whom he had a daughter with a month after he married his ex-wife. So he it's very confusing. So while he was still married to Chrissy, he had a daughter with Amy a month after he married the ex-wife.
Okay, I get you.
It's messy. So police arrested him since his DNA matched under Mindy's nails. But that DNA also linked him to a 2004 Fargo rape case when it was ran through the database. So in July of 2004, a 22-year-old Fargo college student was raped so badly that the sexual assault nurse examiner said it was the worst rape she had ever seen.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she didn't know who the man was, but she did report that this man had threatened to kill her during the rape. DNA came back, you know, and linked him to it. He denied it, but then said this. She could have been one of the 15 women he slept with when he was in Fargo because he liked blondes. Can you imagine being accused of rape and then that's your response? She could have been, no.
I could have had sex with her.
Horrible. Anyway, Mo Gibbs was charged for the murder of Mindy Morgenstern on September 20th, 2006. He entered a plea of not guilty, and his trial took place on June 18, 2007. But it was a hung jury, so it resulted in a mistrial. They had deliberated for 23 hours, but the jury was split 6-6. So they held a second one on October 29th the same year, but this time in Bismarck. This time the jury, which consisted of 7 men and 5 women, found him guilty after deliberating for 27 hours. So on November 15th of 2007, Mo Gibbs was convicted. So during the trial, his defense was pretty much trying to claim that Mindy's DNA could have come from a door handle somewhere in the apartment since they both lived in the same building. And no blood was found on any of his clothing or anything. He could have thrown that all away.
Sure.
They just didn't find any. Yeah. So no clear motive was proven as to why Mo would have killed Mindy. But a jury doesn't require a motive to convict. Some speculate that maybe he was trying to make a sexual advance on her and she rejected him, mm-hmm. which led to murder. He also exercised his right to not testify. And the articles kind of implicated that the jury wanted to hear his side of things because he was, you know, getting accused of all these things, but they never heard his side ever. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to make them wonder, why doesn't he want to defend himself?
Because then he opens up mm-hmm. the gate for them to
exactly
completely attack him.
And I mean, that's his right. So because of the DNA he submitted voluntarily during the proceedings, that linked him to the 2004 rape. So that actually led him to be tried for another 6 felony sexual assault charges by female inmates where he formerly worked as a jailer. So a lot of these inmates, once that kind of got out, came forward and he was their jailer at a women's prison and he
was attacking them.
Yeah, he was doing stuff with them. Yeah, and it didn't get into that, but it sounds like they were believed, you know, which is a little surprising when it's the jailer's word against the inmates, but yeah. Luckily, yeah, they were taken seriously. Okay, so in total, he was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole and then an additional 15 years for the sexual assault charges. So there's a really good episode of Murder in the Heartland about this case. Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't seen that one, but I like that show.
Yeah, it's a really good show. The episode's called The Farmer's Daughter, and it's on IDGO. Her parents and family speak on the show, and just to warn you all, it's heart-wrenching. It doesn't do cheesy reenactments, so you really get to learn about the person and the family, which mm-hmm. I like a lot. And Eunice, Mindy's mom, also wrote a book as a way to help her through the grieving process. And it's using a lot of her journals that she was writing during the trial and everything. It's probably very sad. So she told KX News in an interview the following. It helped to get the words down on paper to express my feelings about the situation. In the process, I found a way to forgive and to celebrate Mindy's life. At first, there was a lot of bitterness, but I was able to call on God and find forgiveness and healing for my heart. Spilling the words out on paper really helped this. So the book is called Mindy, and it's available at Tillman's Market and Rudd's Mobile in New Salem, North Dakota, and also the Rainbow Shop in Bismarck. I don't think it's sold online yet, but if I can find it, I'll share the link. I also got a lot of my info from the North Dakota Court Records, Inforum, Cinemaholic, and Jamestown Sun. It's a very sad case, especially after watching
The show,
yeah. Her parents were just so sweet. You know, you can tell that she was adopted, but she was theirs, you know, like from the get-go. It was just really sweet. That's my sad case.
Mine's not happy either.
Yeah, I didn't figure.
Not that any of them ever are.
No. So we just realized that we got our Dakotas crossed. I just covered a case from North Dakota.
And I covered South Dakota.
So what am I going to do with this Instagram graphic? Just like
split it. We're going to be a house divided.
We're a house divided. Okay, so we're doing North Dakota and South Dakota.
We're just going to roll with it.
We are rolling. I guess this is the problem about not knowing or looking into each other's cases.
I dropped the ball, per usual.
Good. No, so next time around, we're going to do a Dakota flip. I will cover South Dakota.
And I'll do North.
Now I know why when I was looking up North Dakota cases, I never saw this.
She's like, I never heard of this. I'm like, well, I found one you never heard of. I got to get my shit together.
No, this is, for you know, real. This is on brand for us. Luckily, we're good. We can roll with the punches.
Well,
we're not too serious here.
Too bad, North Dakotans. Now you're getting a South Dakota case.
Yeah, well, you know.
And vice versa. So I'm covering the duct tape killer from South Dakota. The south of the Dakotas.
Well, now I got to look up their state motto, though, because
we didn't say that in the beginning. I'm going to talk about Robert Leroy Anderson, who was convicted of kidnap and killing of two different women in the 90s. I'm going to talk about Piper, the latter of the two girls.
Piper, okay.
So Piper was an attractive young woman from Texas. She met her husband in college in Oregon. And they were married in 88, and they moved to South Dakota, like 20 miles south of Sioux Falls. And they had two kids. They were super religious. They opened up a part-time ministry, Prairie View Bible Camp for children. Like, they had pews in their yard that you could, like, see. Like, when you drove down the road, you could see that it was, like, the way that they describe it, it almost sounds like a cult. I'm not going to say it was, but it's just very churchy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's on par for South Dakota. Don't know. So, anyways. So, on the morning of July 29th, 1996, her husband, Vance, left for work around 6:30 in the morning, like he usually did. So, Piper usually leaves a little later and takes their two kids to the babysitter on her way to work. So, Shayna was 3 and Nathan was 2. And today was his birthday. Not today, but July 29th gotcha. Was his birthday. So she works at Southwestern Children's Center in Sioux Falls, which sounds like it's a daycare, basically. Mm-hmm. So she took her kids to the babysitter and then she went to work at daycare. Yeah. So anyways, so she calls the babysitter about 9:20 and says, you know, hey, we're on our way, blah, blah, blah. But she never showed up at the babysitter's, and she never showed up at work. Her husband calls around noon and leaves a message on the machine. Where are you? You know, what's going on? 3 o'clock, her coworker Patty calls to check on her. This time, Shayna answers, the little girl, and says, I don't want my mommy to die. I don't want my daddy to die. They're probably both killed.
What?
Yes, this little baby. So Patty tells her coworker, yo, call the police. Something's going on. She keeps Shayna on the phone for 45 minutes until the cops get there. So now it's after 5. Kids, dogs, everything's still at the trailer that they lived in, but there was no Piper. And the house is just a wreck. The kids are okay physically, but, you know, Shayna's crying. Nathan's just quiet, almost mm-hmm. like in shock. So Shayna tells the cops, mommy's going to die. A mean man grabbed her. He yelled at her and shot a gun. And so the more they talk to this little girl, you know, they found out he was driving a black car and that their mom told them to run and hide. And then she says, he took my brother's birthday present, which was a blue tent that he had got the night before. Like a tent.
Yeah.
So several witnesses described the vehicle, said they did see a black car of some sort in the vicinity that day. One couple said they saw a nervous-looking man in a ball cap walking from the trailer to a black Bronco that was parked in the driveway. So that's where we are. So the husband gets there, Vance. You know, he's consoling his kids. Being a dad, he answers all the questions the cops have to say. You know, they're asking him, do you know? Do you think? Have you been around? And he says, I remember a guy from a few days before that had stopped by. And he was kind of stumbling around to try to say something. Like, he answered the door and the guy almost looked surprised that he answered. Like, maybe he was expecting his wife to answer. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah.
So then he just kind of was like, you know, stumbling around. And finally he says, I've driven by here several times over the last couple months and I saw the pews and you guys run a Bible college or a Bible camp for kids. And they were like, yeah, but it's kind of, you know, it's kind of on hiatus because it's the summer. He's like, oh, well, here's my name and number. I want my kids, you know, I'm looking into, you know, my kids going to a camp or whatever. So he writes his name, all that down on a piece of paper, and then he leaves. So he's like, that's really the only weird instance that I've had with anybody. So they start, you know, looking into things, doing some investigating. They kind of track it all down. He was identified as 26-year-old Leroy, Robert Leroy Anderson. And that was one of the things that stuck out was he had the same, that's what Vance looked for the piece of paper, but he couldn't find it. And he's like, I can't remember. And then he finally was like, oh, his name is X, Y, and Z because it was his grandfather's name.
Okay. I was like, how?
So he's like, that's how he remembered because it was his grandfather's name. So this guy was a 26-year-old high school dropout. He's been married twice. He's got 4 kids. He's a maintenance guy at a meatpacking plant, the John Morrill. You know, they make like the bacon and the hot dogs and all that. You see them at the store.
Hmm.
It's like a red package. Irrelevant. My kid eats a lot of hot dogs.
Oh, family. I have no
My kid eats a lot of hot dogs. So he works nights, 11 to 7 shift. So police go to his house and
11 p.m. to 7 a.m.?
Yes. Gotcha. He works night shift. So police go to his house and wake him up, you know, for questioning.
Yeah.
He gets dressed, goes to the police station. So while he's at the police station, they, you know, interviewing him, investigating, whatever you want, interrogating. For 7 hours, they search his car and his home. And in his Bronco, they find, like, underneath the carpet, plywood and, like, hooks or, like, screws or whatever you want to call them for, like, wrist and ankle restraints in the floorboard.
Don't like that.
No. In the toolbox, they find, like, chain and wooden dowels, duct tape, and black paint. And, like, dog hair. Yeah, like, dog hair. They had, like, a lab or, like, a... And they found that...
You're making me nervous.
They found that dog hair, like, in his Bronco.
Okay.
He said he didn't know anything about this Piper girl's disappearance, but he was there at her house the Friday before. He said he came back, you know, he told him he was there on that Friday and talked to the husband. And then he came back on Monday to use their archery range.
Hmm.
He said he knocked on the door. He heard the kids playing, assumed she was asleep because no one ever came to the door. So he left. So he's like, yeah, I was there, but I didn't do, you know, but this was a few days ago or whatever. So they kept talking to him and discovered that he had speech problems as a child, was really big into anal sex. His wife, not so much. And they brought up the disappearance of another woman named Larissa from a couple years ago, who also worked at the meatpacking plant. Mm-hmm. Same shift with him. He was like, yeah, I don't know anything about her either. And I'm like, really? You ever heard of this girl? You worked with her and she just disappeared. And
how did they get on the topic of?
I guess they were just like talking about, yeah, talking about everything.
Yeah, okay.
Like, so, I mean, yeah, I'm like, how do you go from.
Right, that's just seems like a leap.
But I mean, you, I think they were talking for 7 hours. Oh, so they were like, keep him talking.
Yeah.
He's going to slip up something because he's huge red flag. This guy's, you know.
Sure.
So cops found a pair of jeans in his laundry room. Stained with blood and semen.
Mm.
They did test on it later and they couldn't really determine, you know, whose it belonged to.
But it was human. They knew that.
Yes.
Okay.
So they found handcuff keys and paint, like was in the Bronco, at his house. One of his neighbors also came forward and said they saw him cleaning up his Bronco on the 29th, said he left for a while, and then he came back around 2 and was cleaning it again. He said, that guy's lying. I never cleaned my car. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. He did admit the handcuff keys were his, but said he didn't have handcuffs.
He just has the keys.
He just has the keys. That's what he said. So then he's put into a lineup. And he was picked out by Piper's husband, saying, yes, that is the guy who was at my house. So then they bring little girl Shayna into also the lineup to point out. And she, without them even prompting or saying anything, she pointed him out and said, that's the mean man that yelled at my mom and took her.
How old was she?
4.
Okay.
So he was arrested on August 2nd for Piper's kidnapping. But she was still missing. They didn't find anything. Police and volunteers searched the area, the trailer, for any signs of evidence, and they didn't find anything. So, randomly, a botanist at South Dakota University pointed out bits of vegetation taken from the toolbox as black snake root and honewort. These are fun words. That grow along the Big Sioux River north of Sioux Falls near Baltic, which is a small town. So this random botanist is like,
I love when stuff like this happens.
This plant only grows here. So maybe you should check this area.
I wonder if there's a forensic file.
I'm sure there has to be.
About this.
Sounds totally like a forensic
file. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. So, just so happened, someone spotted a shirt, a piece of a shirt that looked like the one Piper was last seen wearing in the same area. Like, somebody was like, there's a piece of a shirt here. And they knew that, you know, that the girl was missing and whatever. And it was the same shirt. It was black and white and was the same shirt that she was, was wearing whenever she disappeared. So, they search that area. They find the half a shirt, several pieces of duct tape wadded up with hair. It was later proved that it was her hair. They also found a large dildo and used candle wax. I know it makes someone throw up. Her hair was also found in the Bronco, and t-shirt thread was found in like a pocket knife, that, you know, the knives that fold up.
Yeah.
T-shirt thread from that was found in the pocket knife, like in the fold in the that was put up in the Bronco that matched hers. Yeah, you're guilty, sir. He was charged with kidnapping, but again, not murder because there wasn't enough evidence to prove he did it and to be prosecuted successfully. Double jeopardy. You know, that's like the one case I covered. Yeah. Like, they were like, we can't charge him because if something comes out later.
If there's not enough to nab them
on. Yeah. Because if he walks now and we find whatever else that could definitively prove him, it's too bad. Like, we can't try him again.
Yeah.
So, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, the paint that I keep talking about, he painted his Bronco to change the look of it. So, it couldn't be identified.
Okay.
So, apparently it was blue and he painted it black.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, reconstruction of events say he had went to Piper's, handcuffed her, took the piece of paper with his name that he had written down, took her to the woods, secured her to the platform, duct taped her, cut her shirt open with a knife, sexually assaulted and raped her, then killed her and disposed of her body in the woods somewhere in South Dakota. Yeah, he then went back to the house after he did this with those babies still there and got the shell from where he had fired the gun to cover his ass. So he went back to the house.
I was wondering why.
Could you imagine those kids how terrified when he came back without their mother?
No.
I mean, thank God he didn't do anything to those kids, but traumatizing.
If they saw him and he knew it, I'm surprised he didn't.
Well, they were glad. So little, he was probably
he probably didn't think.
Yeah.
I'm glad he thought that.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was when the witnesses said that they saw him. This was about 2 o'clock. So he went there that morning and did all this through the day and then went back about 2 o'clock. But on his way back, he stopped and washed his truck or his Bronco. And now it's blue again. So now that's why there was, you know, people said, yeah, we saw a black truck. Oh, no, we saw a blue truck. Because he stopped at a car wash and washed all the paint off.
So it was like Crayola washables? What was he doing?
I don't know.
What paint it was like that just washes off?
It was like that spraying.
Like the hair
cover
stuff?
Your roots stuff. Yeah.
He could just wash. Oh,
apparently he did. Yes, apparently he did.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
We should have called him the washable paint killer instead of the duct tape killer.
Mm-mm. It's terrible.
In the world.
So, like I said, there's so many, like, crazy details and jump back and forth between the two cases. The other woman that he killed was named Larissa Demansky.
Hmm.
So, yeah, she disappeared like I said, in the early 90s, like 94, I believe. Okay. And this was a couple years later.
Yeah.
So Robert Leroy Anderson was convicted of kidnapping and killing Larissa and Piper. He was sentenced to life in prison for kidnapping Piper. And then a second trial in 99, he got the death penalty. So he was sentenced to death.
Right.
He committed suicide in prison.
How?
By hanging himself with his bed sheets. Wow. He was 33 years old. He was one of five men sentenced to die by lethal injection in South Dakota. But he had at least 8 years of appeals left before they would have put him to death. And he just hung himself.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. The attorney general would later go on to say that Anderson's death brought closure to the families of his victims and also assured that other women were safe, because he was out of the picture now. He did leave a suicide note complaining about prison regulations and included personal information for his mother and sister, but nothing about his victims. Piper's body has never
been found. Oh my gosh, I was wondering.
Found. They've never found it. Nothing. Not a bone.
Even though they knew where to kind of look.
There was nothing there. And he hung himself. So that family will never know where she is. And that is, I mean, it's all bad. But yeah. To not have closure and wonder and wonder and wonder where is disgusting.
They are always going to wonder where she is. And that's mm-hmm. If you're going to die anyway, just... It just goes to show you that he did not care.
He didn't care. Yeah, no, he didn't care.
There's no reasoning with people like this.
No.
Like, you just, wouldn't you want... No, they don't.
No, he doesn't care about...
They don't
about,
think
no.
the same way.
No.
I always try to understand them, and I can't because I'm...
No.
That's really sad and frustrating.
So that's my short synopsis of Robert Leroy Anderson.
That is frustrating. Ugh.
Well, there's no rhyme or reason. Like,
yeah.
He
was married or had
been
divorced.
He's been married twice, divorced twice, and had four children. Worked at a factory, drove by and saw this cute girl with these two children. And, you know, probably the day he went there and was like, with the whole Bible camp thing, he was probably going to do it then.
Yeah.
But her husband was still home. Because, you know, he left early. Usually. So he shouldn't have been there whenever he stopped. Yeah.
Mm.
I cannot imagine being home with Max and somebody knocking on my door and me just answering it and getting ready, like, for work. And, you know, you're running around. You're a mom in the mornings. You're getting stuff together and you're there and you're it's your kid's birthday. And so you're preoccupied and you just answer the door.
It's so
and
sad.
Yeah. And to have to tell your child, go hide.
Yeah.
No.
It's horrible.
It's terrible. So, anyways, where are we next week?
I think we will be in Oregon.
In Oregon? That's the one where we do the...
Yes. We have a collab coming from True Crime Cat Lawyer. Editing goes well, Oregon will be next. If not, who knows? Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel of states. I'm making a map to show where we've just, it's easier for me to visually kind
sure.
of see. So we still have quite a few states left.
I'm excited about the collab in Oregon.
Yeah. We're talking about it's more notorious than the ones we usually cover.
It is. But.
But it's.
Just as sad.
It's very sad. Yeah.
It
really
terrible.
Is. Ugh.
I just watched a 2020 special on it too.
Oh, wow. I should have watched that.
I recorded it. You'll have to come over.
I will. I'll make the trip to Cabot. So I'm looking up South Dakota to try to find their motto, which I'm not succeeding with. I'm just trying to find out some info since I wasn't ready with South Dakota fun facts. Their state dessert is Kuchen?
No idea.
K-U-C-H-E-N.
Kuchen?
See, this is how I go down rabbit holes. Oh, it's German. It looks kind of like I don't know what it is. It's the German word for cake. So it has eggs, flour, sugar, and sometimes it includes fat. It just kind of looks like a round cake, a marble cake with cinnamon.
Hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah, doesn't look bad. They get nearly 200 inches of snow per year.
Nope.
Lead, South Dakota has the most snow of any town in the state.
Nope.
So you know how a lot of snow in the north, like people don't close down stuff? Well, it says that there they do have to close down businesses for a snow day because it's too deep. Like there's no way it can get cleared out in time. Agriculture is the lifeblood of South Dakota and the state's number one industry. Which is not surprising since we know North Dakota is. Well, here's a North Dakota fact. It's illegal to lie down and fall asleep with your shoes on. And in Fargo, you may be jailed if you're wearing a hat while dancing. Beer and pretzels can't be served together in any North Dakota bar or restaurant. I'm just grabbing this quickly what off the this? Internet. This is only in yourstate.com. Sioux Falls gets on average of 38 inches of snow per year. What do you think? Where is South Dakota or North Dakota bigger off the top of your head?
North.
By mass, like land?
North.
South. But by about 6,000 square miles. Join us next week as we head to Oregon and follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder and on Twitter and Facebook at US of M Podcast. Check out our Patreon page. We have some fun stuff up, and as soon as you join, we'll send you some stickers. If you like what you hear, leave a review. That's how we get noticed in the podcast land. I swear it's not just for our egos, but we like when people say nice stuff.
We do.
And if you have constructive criticism, just email that.
Yes, only constructive. We don't care about the other stuff. No. Don't make it weird.
Don't make it weird. Okay. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.